More than 3 years into its existence, AEW finally made its way over the border to Toronto. And they rewarded the Canadian crowd with one of the best Dynamites all year long. I thought this 2 hours just flew on by. Highlighted by the main event for the All-Atlantic Championship, Orange Cassidy. Of course, many people I see here in the chat talking about me winning my very first AEW Championship tonight here on Dynamite. That's one more championship that I've won than the Mets will win this year. So we have a brand new All-Atlantic champion. His name is Orange Cassidy. Finally, they said after 68 wins or 68, whatever the number was, 68 matches. I think it was 68 wins. Orange Cassidy is now a champion, which is going to drive people absolutely crazy. There's going to be a lot of people who are very happy with that, and there's going to be a lot of people who think this is the end of pro wrestling as we know it. Of course, those people are ridiculous. Orange Cassidy has had some tremendous matches this year. None better than the match that we saw him have with Will Ospreay at Forbidden Door. But if he has proven one thing, it is that when he is in the ring, bell to bell, when push comes to shove, all the silliness aside, all the pockets, all the nonsense, the guy can work his ass off. And every time he's in the ring with Pac, they go out there and they have a very good match. It's almost impossible, I think, for Pac to go in there and have anything but a good match, at least a good match. So I enjoyed that main event a great deal, and it was a nice payoff for all the Orange Cassidy fans to see him walk out with a championship tonight. There was another championship on the line, the Ring of Honor World title, Chris Jericho, coming to Canada to defend that title against the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. We do not have a new Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, nor do I think many people were expecting it. But what we did end up with was a bit of a twist. In the story involving the custody of Daniel Garcia, we had a bit of a swerve tonight. I don't see this the way that some of you might see this. I know that some people are going to see what they did tonight, and they're going to think, oh boy, here we go. It's the Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker thing all over again. It's just a swerve. They're back together. Everything's the way it was. I don't quite see it that way. I see it as the next chapter in a longer story that is going to end with Chris Jericho dropping the championship to Daniel Garcia. But it's too soon to do it. There are plenty more Ring of Honor World Champions for Jericho to run through before he drops that title. This is just the next chapter in a longer story that they are telling. But this was Jericho Danielson 3, and it did not disappoint. They went in there and they had a very good match. In fact, that was the story of the show tonight. The in-ring action is what carried this show. A very good main event. A very good Ring of Honor World title match. A hot opener with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. Pay-per-view caliber. Even the ladies went out there and they had a very good match as well. It was Toni Storm and Hikaru Shida against Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. Up and down the line, I thought the in-ring action on this show was very strong. And then we had the promo with Jon Moxley and Hangman Adam Page. They are going to have a championship match on Dynamite, not next Wednesday. Dynamite next week is airing on a Tuesday in Cincinnati. So we're going to get NXT and AEW head-to-head next week. The war that absolutely nobody asked for. Hey, that rhymes. But on that show, Moxley will defend his title against Hangman Page. Hangman came out tonight and he bore his soul. His job tonight was to come out and explain to you, the viewing audience, why this match means so much to him. Why this championship match is not just a throwaway match. Why it is such an important match. And I think he knocked it out of the park. I think he went out there and did exactly what he was supposed to do in a very strong promo segment that Moxley really, I mean, barely said a word. This was all Hangman here tonight. Speaking of Moxley, the other thing that we saw tonight, we have a new signing in AEW. Tony Khan has signed yet another new contract, and the name of the contract is Renee Paquette. There she is, Mrs. Moxley. She is now officially All Elite. The graphic went up even before Dynamite went on the air tonight. Renee Paquette is All Elite. WWE reportedly had interest in bringing her back to the company. They reached out to her. She turned them down because she knew that she was going to end up in AEW. And the only thing about this that honestly is surprising is that it took this long. I thought she would be in the company long before this. Otherwise, I'm not really surprised by this at all, and I think it's a great pickup. I think she's perfect as a backstage interviewer, as somebody who can do sit-down type stuff. She can host stuff. I mean, she's got that kind of personality that I think she will do very well in that role. This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, October 12, 2022. I am the Solomonster. Thank you so much for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage. Do me a favor, if you would, hit that subscribe button. If you are not already subbed to the channel, make sure that you have the alerts open so that when new content goes up, when I go live, it hits your sub boxes and you will know before anybody else. So hit that subscribe button. Also, if you like this video and you like all the other content on this channel, and you've got plenty of it to go back and watch, also hit the like button because it does help the video out. And the goal for the Be the Booker segment tonight, if we are going to do it, is going to be 500. So I know we already have well over 100. Let's shoot for 500 tonight for Be the Booker, which has been refreshed. We have added some stuff. We've added some new faces to the men's, women's, and tag team Be the Booker. Only you can unlock it. It's like a video game cheat code. Only you can be the game genie and unlock Be the Booker tonight. So Renee Paquette, the newest signing, was out on stage to open the show. She got the big pop. They were waiting for Canada. See, now it makes all the sense in the world. They probably had her pretty much all signed up weeks ago, and they were waiting until the big Canadian debut to trot the Canadian out there to get the big pop. So they were very happy to see her. She got a huge reaction here in her home country. And she introduced another countryman in Christian Cage out on stage to join her, and he guaranteed victory tonight for Luchasaurus in his match with Jungle Boy. He said that it would be guaranteed, like the Maple Leafs losing in the first round, guaranteed. That level of guarantee. Or the Mets. Excalibur did make the same joke to Taz about the Mets getting bounced out of the wild card. Good. Good. They deserve it. They deserve it. How many days during the baseball season did the Mets spend in first place in the National League East? It was the vast majority of the season. It was some ridiculous number, 100 and something days. And they end up playing a wild card series. This all could have been avoided. But they choked at the exact wrong time, which is what they always do, classic LOL Mets. They choked when it mattered most, and they paid the price for it. They got bounced. They got bounced. They deserve to lose. So anyway, he introduced Luchasaurus for his match with Jungle Boy Jack Perry. I do notice now they're pushing his real name. I noticed it in the graphic, actually, that they put on social media earlier for tonight's show. First time I've seen them in an actual graphic, say Jungle Boy in small writing and then Jack Perry kind of featured as his real name, which is fine. I mean, it's only a matter of time. They should start pushing his real name. It can't be Jungle Boy forever. Eventually, he's going to be Jungle Man. So it makes perfect sense that they would start using his real name. Christian sat in on commentary. Yeah, 175 days. I said it was some ridiculous number like that. 175 days in first place, leading the division. And they end up coming in second and having to fight in the wild card. This is the most depressed I have ever been seeing a team win 101 games. So, fuck it. They get what they deserve. Blow the whole fucking team up. So Jungle Boy had tape on his back. He's still selling the effects of that choke slam on the Pyro Great from All Out when he took that huge choke slam bump by Luchasaurus. We were 90 seconds in before Luchasaurus grabbed a table, grabbed the table from the timekeeper's area. And he moved it. He set it up over by the head of the aisleway, right outside the ring. But Jungle Boy fought back, so the table went unused heading into the first commercial break. From what I saw in the little box in the picture-in-picture, Luchasaurus spent the entire break punishing Jungle Boy, including a hard whip into the corner. Jungle Boy took an upside-down bump and landed right on his head. Coming out of the break, Jungle Boy knocked the dinosaur out of the ring right in front of the table. And he went for a suicide dive. Luchasaurus, though, caught him by the throat and tried to choke slam him through the table. Jungle Boy, though, countered the attempt into a Rana that sent Luchasaurus hurling forward into the ring post. Both men ended up on the apron, right above where the table was positioned. Jungle Boy avoided a powerbomb attempt, though. And this was the spot of the night. Not just the spot of the match. This was the big moment of the night here. So he avoids the powerbomb, right? He falls back into the ring. And he hit, I forget if he hit him or he super kicked Luchasaurus, but he was kind of hanging on, right? He was hanging on for dear life so he wouldn't fall backwards. Jungle Boy hit the ropes on the opposite side of the ring. He came charging in. He dove over Luchasaurus, hit a sunset bomb, and powerbombed Luchasaurus off the apron down through the table. That looked fucking great. Luchasaurus sold the shit out of it. He took a great bump. It was almost like as he took the sunset bomb, he did a little jump and then landed through the table. It was a picture-perfect bump. They showed about three different replays of it. That could have gone wrong in so many ways. It could have looked bad. You know, sometimes people hesitate. They hold on to the rope for an extra 2 seconds and then let go. This was timed perfectly. Just a great bump through that table. Christian, at this point, did not like what he was seeing. And he got up and he left the announce desk. And he came or started to make his way down the ramp ever so slowly. Jungle Boy saw this. He got out of the ring. He stood at the head of the aisleway and was basically challenging him. He was defying him. Come down here. I dare you. As the camera is shooting Jungle Boy standing there, looking this way, Christian, just over Jungle Boy's shoulder in the ring, in the background, you see Luchasaurus do the Michael Myers zombie sit-up. And as if he could just tell, right? He didn't even have to look. Now, I mean, he's got the screen, so he could have just looked up at the screen. But on commentary, Excalibur tried to explain that, you know, these two know each other so well. It's almost like a sixth sense that Jungle Boy had, that he just knew that Luchasaurus did the sit-up because he turned around slowly and he saw that Luchasaurus had gotten back up. So Jungle Boy, at this point, got back in the ring. Now, Christian has come at this point down to ringside. Now the Jungle Boy is back inside. Christian is down at ringside. He's going to be the one-arm manager at ringside. Jungle Boy had the big man crotched on the top rope, and he pulled him backwards, upside down, in the Tree of Woe position. He did a little fancy slide into the opposite corner, trying to build up momentum. I guess he was going to try charging in for a dropkick. As he came charging in for the attempted dropkick, though, Luchasaurus wiggled free, took him out. Jungle Boy countered a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker into a crucifix slam for two. Crowd was into this. Crowd was into this entire show. This is one of the things I love about Canadian crowds and why I couldn't believe it took them this long to make their way up north. The Canadian crowds are some of the best wrestling crowds you'll ever find. I mean, you put them in competition against the UK crowds and they'll fight it out to the death, right? Some of the best wrestling fans, the most vocal wrestling fans in the world. WWE has been to Canada a few times in recent weeks. I think they may have been in Toronto. They were in Montreal for SmackDown a while back. Sami Zayn got that incredible reaction. Canadian crowds are great, and this was their first show. And your first time in the market, you expect them to do really well. I think tonight was a sellout. They had a couple of hundred seats left. I don't know if they sold all of them out, but it was more or less a sellout. They did not run a big stadium show. They did not run the bigger arena. I think this arena, they had about six, maybe between 6,000 and 7,000. But they were loud, and they were hot for this match as well. So he hits a poison Rana, does Jungle Boy, takes the big guy over, and then he hits Christian's kill switch on Luchasaurus. Very close near fall out of that. He got the snare trap submission applied. Luchasaurus, though, got to the ropes. Christian briefly distracted Jungle Boy, who had climbed up to the top rope. That gave Luchasaurus an opening to grab him by the throat. He delivered a top rope chokeslam. And then hit a modified release burning hammer for the three count. This was a hot pay-per-view caliber opener to the show tonight. The first time that we have ever seen these two in the ring together one-on-one. They've been on the same side. They've been tag team champions. We've not seen them in an actual one-on-one match until now. I loved it. And you know that these two have been planning this match out in their head probably for months. Right. They wanted to make sure the first match they had together was going to be a memorable one. They wanted to go out there. They did not want to disappoint. They wanted to go out there. They wanted to have a pay-per-view level match, and mission accomplished. That's exactly what they did. That sunset bomb table spot, though, again, I keep going back to that. That could not have gone any better. It's too soon for Jungle Boy to beat the big guy because Christian is going to be out for a while. Christian had surgery on his arm around, well, actually, it was a little bit before CM Punk had his injury, but I believe Christian suffered the same injury that Punk did. Punk had surgery. If Punk does come back to the company, it's not going to be for at least another 7 or 8 months. That could be about how long Christian's going to be out for. So he had his surgery, figure, end of August, beginning of September. Well, it's only mid-October. So it's going to be a while before we see Christian back in the ring. If they're going to stick with this story, you've got to find ways to drag this out. It's way too early to give Jungle Boy the win over Luchasaurus. When we get closer to a Christian comeback, then you can have him go over on Luchasaurus. We may get another one or two matches here, and Jungle Boy falls short each time. Eventually, though, he'll get the win, and then he can move on to Christian. Unfortunately, the injury came at a horrible time, and they're kind of in limbo now. They're going to have to figure out what to do to pass the time. It's nice that they have Christian out there, at least. He's doing stuff. He's making appearances on TV, but he can't get physical. You know, he can't have a match. So it would have been way too soon for him to get the win over Luchasaurus. So Renee was backstage with Ethan Page and Stokely Hathaway, and they are talking to Private Party, and I got to tell you, this whole storyline when it comes to the Andrade, it goes back to the Hardy family office. The Hardy family office, the Andrade family office. I don't know who owns what. In terms of contracts, I don't know what the name of the faction is. I guess it's the firm, right? Because Stokely's there, so it's the firm. So basically, the point of this segment was to explain that thanks to Jose the Assistant, they being Private Party, I guess, are now owned by the firm. They're being traded. Well, I don't want to use that word, but they're being traded. I mean, this is ridiculous here. So now they're owned by the firm. Matt Hardy comes into the segment. Apparently, Matt Hardy is, again, trying to get back in the good graces of Private Party, and he feels bad about taking advantage of them all those, you know, many months ago. So now we have a match. This was all to set up a match for Rampage on Friday. And if Isaiah Cassidy can beat Ethan Page, Private Party can leave the firm. But if Page beats Cassidy, then Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn and Matt Hardy all have to join the firm. I don't care about any of this. I cannot bring myself to care about any of this. This is just completely over my head. I don't care. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know who owns what and what, where all the moving pieces are here. Andrade, we don't know what's up with Andrade. He got sent home last week. Are we going to see him again? Well, don't bother asking Tony Khan, because if you do, he's not going to say anything. Ariel Helwani was very upset about that. We can talk about that on Sunday, but he did an interview last week with Tony Khan that dropped on his YouTube channel. And then I saw this was a big story today where he came out and said that the interview he did with Tony Khan is the most frustrating and unfun interview that he has ever done with anybody because he couldn't get Tony to say anything. Now, he seemed to mainly be upset about the fact that when he asked about Punk and Omega and the Bucks, Tony was very evasive and wouldn't give him an answer. And I understand that because there's potentially legal ramifications to that, but Tony doesn't say anything in these interviews. He really never offers much. It is very frustrating when you watch or you listen to some of these interviews, and obviously he's a very big fan, a very big cheerleader of AEW. He's AEW's biggest cheerleader, and he's going to promote. That's what promoters do. But when you are an interviewer, you expect there to be some give and take. And his issue was that there was a lot of taking and no giving when it came to Tony Khan. So again, we could talk more about that on Sunday. But yeah, even if you ask Tony Khan, you're not gonna get much out of him as far as what's up with Andrade or anything else for that matter. So he came back to the ring. Tony Khan needs a PR rep, says Mark Kay. You got a PR rep sitting right here. Now AEW has their own PR people. And in a situation like this, it really doesn't matter anyway. He's the president of the company, you know. He's going to go, at the end of the day, when he does these things. And I've been in situations like this before. I've been in meetings with clients, CEOs, presidents, heads of the company, right? People that are very up, very high up on the food chain, who are worth millions and millions and millions of dollars. You can talk to them until you turn blue in the face and say, I think you should do this. Don't say that. You should, you know, they're going to do what they want to do. At the end of the day, it's their company. It's their money. And they're going to do what they want to do. Now, I don't know if he's someone who's coachable. You know, some people in his position are very coachable and they take advice and they listen. They're good listeners. Other people are not very disciplined at all. And they will go and tweet things and do things and say things that, you know, as the PR rep, you just want to bury your head in the sand and you just want to kind of crawl in a hole and die. But at the end of the day, they're going to do what they're going to do. So anyway, we come back. QT Marshall was in the ring. Oh joy. We go from the segment that we just had to a QT Marshall segment. It's amazing I didn't turn the show off at this point, but we had QT in the ring with Aaron Solo and Nick Camerato. And they were making fun of Wardlow and Samoa Joe merging their names together because now they're being called Ward Joe, which is a pretty terrible name. So he was mocking them for that. Wardlow came out. Samoa Joe came out. It was a tag team match. Joe put Camerato down. Wardlow hit him with a swanton bomb. Huge swanton off the top. Joe applied the coquina clutch. He got the submission win. 2 minutes flat. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. That's all that it was. That's all she wrote. Not much else to say about this. After the match, Wardlow powerbombed QT. As he was setting up for a second one, he was interrupted by the embassy with Prince Nana leading Brian Cage and the Gates of Agony to the ring. 2 weeks in a row. We got 2 weeks in a row of Brian Cage making an appearance on Dynamite. This feels like the dawning of a new era here on this show. I couldn't believe it. When I saw Brian Cage out there 2 weeks in a row and that he wasn't forgotten about after last week, I had to pinch myself and say, am I watching this? Is this real? Am I going to wake up or something? And this is going to be some kind of dream I'm waking up from? But there he was. And Prince Nana had a mic that he accused Wardlow and Joe of sticking their noses where they don't belong. Cage took the mic. He complained that Wardlow and Joe stuck their noses in their business when they had FTR right where they wanted them. My issue with Brian Cage on the mic, he's not a great promo. My issue with him is that he speed talks to the point where sometimes he kind of trips over his own words. And it can be sometimes hard to understand what he's saying when he's in that mode and he's talking so fast. And I'm just sitting here going, just slow it down. It's like he's nervous. I think that could be part of it. People do that sometimes. When they're nervous, they'll just talk really, really, really fast and they'll kind of trip over their own words. I think if he just kind of pumps the brakes and slows things down a little bit, that would make his promos a lot better. But again, promos are not his strong suit, hence why he's with Prince Nana. He's part of a faction. I think that's perfect. That way he doesn't have to do much talking. So he did a little bit of talking here. And he was talking about FTR. And he said, you know, we haven't even seen FTR all day. And if it were up to him, he wouldn't even let him over the border. And as soon as he said that, they played FTR's music. Big reaction from the crowd in Toronto. They came out draped in all their gold. All but the AEW tag team titles. They have all this gold, but they don't have the gold representing the company here that they actually work for full time. Hopefully that will change in the new year. Right now, the Acclaimed is going to have their run. But FTR will get these belts back at some point in the not too distant future. So they join Wardlow and Joe in the ring, and Dax Harwood took the mic. I think he dropped it at first. I think he dropped the mic. I thought I heard him drop an F-bomb here, but maybe I heard something else. He said Wardlow and Joe just had a hard-fought match, so they had the perfect tag team partner for Rampage on Friday. They're going to have a trios match. They had the perfect tag team partner, and he looked over at Cash, and he asked Cash Wheeler, when does Rampage start? And he looked at the crowd, and the crowd started, and of course Wheeler is looking at his fingers, and he puts up 10 fingers, and the crowd starts chanting 10. And out comes the returning Sean Spears, doing the old 10 gimmick that he was doing back in NXT. We have not seen Sean Spears in many months. Legitimately, outside of one email that I got about 2 weeks ago from someone asking me what happened to Sean Spears, I haven't even thought about Sean Spears. I completely forgot about him, didn't even know he was still employed with the company. Got an email from someone 2 weeks ago who happened to ask me about him, and I said, huh, come to think of it, we haven't seen Sean Spears. Then he pops up on TV tonight. You know, they're dusting him off to get the big pop because he's from Ontario. So they were in Canada, he came out, he got a very nice reaction. Aaron Solo was distracted by this. He seemed very upset. Seemed very angry about this as he was looking at Spears outside the ring. When he turned around, he walked right into a big rig from FTR. And that was the end of the segment. I am unmoved by anything that Sean Spears does these days. But I do appreciate one thing. I appreciate that Spears was part of the pinnacle with FTR and MJF and Wardlow. And so there's a bit of story. There's a bit of storyline consistency here. The Pinnacle never actually broke up. MJF and Wardlow broke up, but the Pinnacle itself, they just sort of went their separate ways. There was never any kind of formal split in the Pinnacle. So it kind of makes sense that if Harwood and Wheeler are going to call upon somebody to be their partner, it would be their old Pinnacle buddy, right? They're being very friendly with Wardlow. They go back. Well, they go back with Spears, too. So at least there's some consistency there storyline-wise. That's about the only thing about this I appreciate. Sean Spears being back, it could be a one-off for Canada. We don't know, but it's a non-factor as far as I'm concerned. Backstage, Tony Schiavone was interviewing Chris Jericho, Angelo Parker, and Matt Menard ahead of Jericho's title match later tonight with Bryan Danielson. They blame Bryan Danielson for trying to steal Daniel Garcia from the JAS. Jericho said he felt bad about taking out Garcia last week, and he tried to reach him all week. Jericho said that he would be in Lionheart mode when he fought Jericho later, or fought Danielson, rather, later in the show. So he was back again in his Lionheart tights this week, doing the Lionheart gimmick. We had Swerve Strickland one-on-one with Daddy S. They actually put that in the graphic on the screen now for him. Daddy Ass Billy Gunn. The Acclaimed came out with Billy Gunn, so we got a Max Caster rap on this show. Among the things that he said, Acclaimed on the mic, I'm a beast with words. Billy Gunn about to beat down Sneaky Swerve. Though you're going to need a new nose, have your face swollen, looking blacker than Trudeau's. Got the whole place laughing at you. We put you on the ice like Austin Matthews. Now, I'm not the biggest hockey fan in the world, but I have heard the name Austin Matthews before. He is one of the best players in the NHL. And of course, they name dropped him tonight because he plays for the Maple Leafs. So you got a big pop. You want to pop the Canadians. It's very easy. There's certain things that you would do. If I was ever in front of a Canadian crowd, and I wanted to make certain that I would get a good reaction. And I know I would get a good reaction anyway. I have a lot of fans in Canada. I have a lot of listeners up there in Canada. I'd go up there and be like Hogan coming to Toronto. His entire career, every time Hogan would go up to Canada, I don't know exactly what it is, but every time Hogan would go up to Canada, he always got a hero's welcome. He got a monster reaction wherever he went, right? Canada just has certain people that they like. I'm sure I would get a fine reaction. But if I wanted to guarantee a positive response, all I would do, I would study up on my hockey and I would drop some hockey references. So depending on what province I was in, I would put over their team and I would be the most popular man in the entire building. Very easy. So you want to get a big pop in Canada, study up on your NHL. Nothing will ever top Hollywood Rock, though. As good as this may have been, nothing will ever top Hollywood Rock. Stronger than a bear, faster than a buck. The biggest thing to hit Canada because the Maple Leafs suck. One of the all-time great promos. Did the Maple Leafs suck back then? That was 2003. I have no idea if the Maple Leafs actually did suck back then. I guess they don't suck now. They must be pretty good. But that is an all-timer. Now, Billy Gunn was out there. And Billy Gunn is out there looking like he was looking at 58 years old. I don't know that everybody is aware of that, but Billy Gunn is almost 60. And you saw him out there in the ring tonight. Billy Gunn is older than every single living remaining member of D-Generation X. He is older than Triple H, Shawn Michaels, X-Pac, Road Dogg. I don't know how old Hornswoggle. You want to consider Hornswoggle a member of DX? Hornswoggle was like the honorary Oos of DX. I don't consider him an official member. But he's older than every living member of DX. We saw them on television on Monday night, and he looks so much better than they do. Now, look, Triple H, I can understand, because obviously the guy almost died last year. And I say that regardless of how he got his physique. The fact remains that he looks better than all of the other DX members, and yet he is the oldest member of DX, which is crazy to me. So Swerve worked over Billy's leg for most of the match. Hit the Swerve stomp. Billy kicked out, though, and Swerve couldn't believe it. He looked shocked, like he was completely caught off guard and surprised by that. Billy tried for the Famouser. Swerve avoided it. Hooked him over in a pin attempt. While grabbing the ropes, referee did not see it. He got the cheap win that way. The Acclaimed came back down to the ring to check on Billy after the match. Once they realized that he was okay and he was back up on his feet, they were getting ready to do a three-way scissoring in the middle of the ring. They were going to scissor each other in the middle of the ring. And out comes Mark Sterling and Tony Nese. Smart Mark and Tony Nese. Yes, by the way, I am aware that Brian James had a heart attack as well. So Triple H and Brian James both had heart issues, although that was, I'm trying to think, when did Road Dogg have his heart attack? I think he had a mild heart attack. It was nowhere near as serious as what Triple H went through. I think with Road Dogg, that was at least 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. Sean Waltman, let me tell you, Sean Waltman's also been to hell and back. Sean Waltman tried to hang himself. He was hanging himself in Mexico, and thankfully somebody was there to kind of pull him down and save him. But he's been to hell and back. He seems to have gotten himself into a good place. Yeah, I think if you give him a couple of months to get ready, I think you get him back in the ring for like one more match, one more in-ring appearance, I think Waltman would do just fine. I think now he's pushing for a spot in the Royal Rumble, and I mean, given who runs WWE, if he wants a spot in the Royal Rumble as a surprise that badly, I don't think he's going to have to struggle too much to get it. Shawn Michaels could probably come back tomorrow and still have a good match too. I just don't want to see that. I don't want to even remember what happened in Saudi Arabia 4 years ago. I'm going to pretend like that never happened. I'm going to pretend that he retired at WrestleMania 26. As far as I'm concerned, that's Shawn Michaels' last match in 2010. That's how I would choose to remember Shawn Michaels. Going out in the main event of WrestleMania. So here comes Smart Mark and Tony Nese. And Sterling had Nese show off a certificate. Had a nice gold emblem on it. It looked very official. Looked very real. Showing that they have trademarked the scissor me catchphrase for anything involving pro wrestling. And if you were wondering, is this legit or is it just part of a storyline? Indeed, if you look on your screen right now, it is legit. What you see there, this is a screenshot from the official U.S. Patent and Trademark Office website. And as you can see here, the Scissor Me trademark, it is now registered to Smart Mark LLC. So how about that? Now, I don't know if he did this on his own or if this was AEW doing it and they just set up this Smart Mark limited liability company, but very smart. Very smart to go ahead and make that official. Probably not a bad thing to have ownership of that anyway. So the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, they teased doing the scissor bit anyway. They were about to try doing it again. And Sterling stopped them and said, you better not. And then he thought of it. He says, you know what? On second thought, go ahead and do it. I want you to do it. Because if you do it, I will sue you. I will sue you and I will tie you up in court for months. And then I will get all of your money and residuals from it anyway. So they ended up not doing it, and Sterling said that he had some ideas. He is willing to work with them. he's got some ideas, and he goes, in the meantime, scissor me daddy niece. And then the two of them scissored each other. Yeah, that last bit was mildly amusing. This is all very silly. This is almost as bad as that stupid angle in WCW, in the dying days of WCW, when Booker T could not use the letter T anymore. You remember this? This idiotic storyline. I think Booker T and Stevie Ray were feuding. I think there was a rift in Harlem Heat. And Harlem Heat, I think, at that point was Stevie Ray and Big T. Big T was the former Ahmed Johnson. And I think it all came down to a match between Booker and Ahmed, and it was for the right to use the letter T. This is a real storyline, by the way. This is almost as stupid as that. So Alex Marvez was in the back. He was attempting, I don't know why you would even bother using Marvez when you have Renee. You've already got Shivani. You've got Renee. You don't even need Marvez. Marvez can write for the website. He's always been a writer. I've been seeing Marvez's columns and like newspaper columns probably for 30 years. We don't need him anymore doing backstage. We got Renee. We got Renee Paquette. Sounds French, right? Very French. Like Maurice. Maurice Aulet. We had Maurice on TV on Monday. We had Renee on TV on Wednesday. There's something about these Canadian women. Marvez was in the back. He was attempting to interview MJF. And he didn't get very far into this before Stokely Hathaway showed up. And MJF was kind of laughing it off, but you could tell he was annoyed at the fact that his interview was being interrupted. And he yelled at Hathaway and basically said, this is strike two. Strike one was last week, when you interfered at the end of my match with Wheeler Yuta. Remember, Yuta was putting his hand out for the handshake, and MJF looked like he might have actually put his hand out and accepted the handshake, but we'll never know because the firm attacked Yuta from behind, and he said, I didn't ask you to do that. He said, this is strike two. He threatened to fire Hathaway and told him to take his Carlton Banks-looking ass out of his shot. And Hathaway couldn't believe it. He just kind of smiled, and he walked away. And at that point in his promo, MJF turned his attention to William Regal. And he said that he and Regal have a dark past that nobody knows about. He said he's sure that Regal can't remember it because he was up on his high horse. So then he moved past that. I don't know where that's going, other than it's probably going to a really good segment, a talking segment in the ring at some point with MJF and William Regal. And that is something I'm looking forward to. But as far as what their history could be, I have no idea what that's about. MJF said that he didn't know if he was going to shake Yuta's hand last week. He goes, I honestly don't know. I don't know what I would have done. He says he has come to terms with the fact that at a young age, the young age of 26, he had to learn the hard way that nice guys finish last. Actually, well, MJF is 26. How old is Yuta? It's got to be younger than that. I think Yuta is younger than he is. He said, we don't have a clue what it's like to be MJF, knowing that he had no choice but to be the bad guy. He has broken his hands many times, punching his own reflection. So if you don't like him, tough shit. Because he doesn't like him either. But that's what it takes to become champion of the world, and he will become the AEW World Champion because he's the man with the plan, the man with the chip, and the man who is a generational talent. This was a very good promo, I thought, from MJF. The usual good stuff from him. I'm intrigued as far as the Regal stuff. I don't know what that is leading to, other than what I'm sure is going to be a very memorable segment between the two of them in the ring at some point. Tony Schiavone was in the ring, and he noted that next week's Dynamite will be airing on a Tuesday, which I will mention again later, but that is a little programming note for those of you who are not aware, because of, I don't know what exactly, I guess it's a baseball? Might be baseball. But whatever it is on TBS next week, it's got to be baseball. Dynamite is being bumped one day early. It's going to be airing on Tuesday at 8 p.m. next week, head-to-head with NXT. On that show from Cincinnati, the hometown of Jon Moxley, it will be Moxley defending the AEW World Championship against Hangman Adam Page. So Schiavone introduced Moxley, who entered through the crowd. The newly signed Jon Moxley, who is now signed to a 5-year contract with this company, just to make it very clear that he is not going to WWE. He's very happy. He's very content where he is in AEW. He came into the ring. He said, after 3 years, it feels damn good to be in Toronto. And he says, you always have a target on your back as world champion. Most crumble under the pressure, some quicker than others. He said that it's a job that requires you to be ruthless, and that's what he loves about it. As soon as he mentioned Hangman Page's name, here comes the cowboy. He came down to the ring. I don't know what he was wearing. He's like doing his best Seth Rollins impression now by dressing in these ridiculous outfits every week. I think a few weeks ago already he had like unicorns on his jeans. He was wearing yellow tonight. So, comes into the ring. And he said that he's watched Moxley the last 3 years, and he's come to respect who he is both inside and outside the ring. He said that Moxley is a hell of a champion, a hell of a husband, and a hell of a father. He said that Moxley shattered the illusions that he had when Mox called him a nice kid. That bothered him. When Moxley last week said that, oh, Hangman, he's a nice kid, it bothered him greatly. He asked Moxley if that's how he really feels about him, and Moxley said, that's exactly what I think about you. He said, I don't think you're the same guy who knocked me off a 20-foot ladder 1 year ago. Next week in Cincinnati, if you get the shot to take me out, I don't think you've got it in your guts to pull the trigger. And this was now Hangman's opportunity at this point in the promo to sell the match next week. This is where things kicked into that next gear, full gear, you might say. And Hangman Page went out and he delivered a promo that I thought did exactly what it was supposed to do, which was to sell you on the idea that this match is the most important thing in the world to this man. Getting that championship back is the only thing that matters to him. And he talked about how I'm off my medication and I don't feel good and I'm depressed and I've lost my friends and, you know, obviously he lost his title all these months ago. He's in a very dark place. It was kind of dark and disturbing here for a little bit, but he made you believe that this is the most important thing in the world to him. And that match in Cincinnati next week was really do or die. It was make or break for his career. He said that he may not be that same guy he was last year. He said that he hesitated in May and it cost him the championship. He also said that he went to the Trios Tournament Finals with his best friends and they failed to win the belts. He said that he's had to watch week after week as those friends from the Dark Order disappeared one by one. And then he said that his old friends have also disappeared, which was the first time, I think, on this show since All Out that there's even been a fleeting reference to Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. Without mentioning their name, that's who he was talking about. And they have, in fact, disappeared from television without any explanation at all. That is true. Hangman said that he's not the same man. He's angry. He's frustrated. He said he's still here because he's a man. He said he's 31 years old and he's been an AEW tag team champion. He's been AEW world champion. He said that he's watched family members lowered into the ground. He said that he has also brought new life into this world, just like John Moxley has, right? Moxley has a kid, so does Hangman. He said that he's a husband, a father. He's been choked out until his face turned blue. He's punched himself in the head at this point several times. He did his best Ric Flair impression. He was trying to open himself up. And he did. He did a number on his forehead, right above his right eye. He drew blood. He cut himself, with his knuckles, over his eye. MJF was shown multiple times sitting up in the skybox watching all of this. And at this point, when Page was punching himself and really getting all fired up, there's a great moment where they cut to MJF and he was eating popcorn. So he's up there. He's having a great time. He's having a blast watching this. So Page did, like I said, he did a number on his forehead. He said that he knows what he has to do in Cincinnati and he doesn't care if Moxley has family in the crowd, if his mother is there, friends are there, doesn't matter. He said he's going to beat Moxley within an inch of his life to take back the title that he never should have let slip away. He said the only things that he has left are his shot and his word. He said he's going to get his shot next Tuesday, and he gave his word that he would be the next AEW world champion. And he said that unlike MJF, he kind of looked up at MJF in the box, said unlike him, he wanted to come out and tell Moxley that face-to-face, man-to-man. And he went to go leave the ring. Moxley looked like maybe he was going to come at him. Hangman stopped to see what he was going to do. Moxley resisted. There was no physicality here. And Page walked off. And at the end of all this, the crowd chanted, not for Moxley, not for Hangman. They chanted for MJF. And I don't look at that as a reflection on this segment being bad or failing. I just think the people have spoken. Just like the people spoke in the main event when it came to Orange Cassidy. The people have spoken many times recently. They've made their voices heard on the Acclaimed at All Out, and now they're the tag team champions. Orange Cassidy has been over for a very long time. Now he's the All-Atlantic champion. People are dying to see MJF win the AEW World Championship, and it will happen. Very likely at Full Gear. It will happen. But I thought, as far as this segment, I would go so far as to say that this was the best Hangman promo in the 3 years of All Elite Wrestling. And he's had some promos where he's gotten, you know, very fired up and very emotional. He's had some good ones. I think this is the best one that he's done. He never stumbled. He showed great fire, really put over the importance of next week's title match, which is what you want to do. You want to build that championship match up as a very big deal. Even if people think this guy has no chance of winning, and he doesn't. He's not walking out of Dynamite next week with the title. But you don't want people to go in there thinking that. You want to do what you can to convince people that maybe this guy has a shot. And even if he doesn't, you know what? He's going to go out there and you're probably going to get a kick-ass match out of it. But he did everything that he could possibly do to try to convince you that he might have a shot and that he needs this. This is why this is important to me. I don't have anything left. I'm a husband, I'm a father, I have my family, but my friends are gone, my title is gone. It's been a very dark period for me. I hit rock bottom in my career. This is my ticket back to the top. I have to beat you. I have to beat you and get that belt back. I have to redeem myself. And I thought he communicated that very well here in this promo. I want to thank our sponsor, ExpressVPN. Remember that Rockwell song from the 80s? I always feel like somebody's watching me. You know, for years I swore it was Michael Jackson singing that song. I wasn't totally wrong. He did do the guest vocals for it. It's the perfect song for Halloween season, but it also happens to be very true. Every day there really is somebody watching your every move. The worst part is that you're even paying them to spy on you. That someone is your internet service provider. They're keeping tabs on every website you visit. And that's why I use ExpressVPN. In the US, internet service providers are legally allowed to sell their users' browser activity to advertisers. And it's not just them. Your network admin at work, at school, they can see everything you click on. But with ExpressVPN, 100% of your traffic is rerouted through their encrypted server so that nobody can see a thing. And my favorite part is that ExpressVPN is stupidly simple to use. You just open the app, tap the big on button, and you're ready to go. It's just that easy. ExpressVPN also works on all of your devices, whether you're on your desktop or on your phone. You can use up to 5 devices at once under one ExpressVPN subscription. So stop letting people invade your privacy. Right now, get 3 extra months of ExpressVPN for free when you go to expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. expressvpn.com/solomonster to learn more. So they did not give Chris Jericho, I thought they would, they did not give Chris Jericho the main event slot for the 3rd straight week. This would have been 3 weeks in a row of Chris Jericho in the main event on Dynamite. Instead, they put this match on about, I think it was 9:07 when they did the ring intros for this. It was Chris Jericho defending the Ring of Honor World Championship against the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. But not just any Chris Jericho, it was Lionheart Chris Jericho. So when he came out, they started with his Judas theme, and everybody was getting ready to sing along, right? Judas in my mind. Oh, everyone's doing the karaoke every single week. And then they swerved them. They cut the music off. And they played some White Zombie that Jericho used to come out to back in his old ECW days. He came out dressed up like Lionheart, like it was fucking 1996 or 1995 all over again. But these Toronto fans, boy, they are a determined bunch. So just because they cut off Judas does not mean that they were not going to get to sing their song. And when the match started and these guys started going at it, the crowd was busy chanting, and not even chanting, but they were singing Judas as if the song was played anyway. They said, you know what? We came to this show. You guys have never been to Canada before, and we wanted to come, and we wanted to sing this fucking song. You're not going to do this to us. We're going to sing it anyway. And that's what they did, and they got to sing Judas. So Bobby Cruz did the ring introductions. Ian Riccaboni and William Regal joined the announcers on commentary. Again, it was Excalibur, Taz, Tony Schiavone. Jim Ross is basically on Rampage duty exclusively at this point, which is fine with me. Jericho got the Walls of Jericho applied briefly to a big reaction. He was the big babyface here in this match, right? Even though he was born in New York, he grew up in Canada. He's a Canadian guy. So you got to cheer for the hometown guy. So whenever he would go on offense, he would get cheered. And when Danielson fought back, he would get booed. So Danielson ended up putting on a Walls of Jericho of his own. He got booed for it. Jericho escaped into a small package. He went for a lion salt, missed. Danielson hit a diving knee off the top rope, not once but twice. On the third attempt, Jericho countered into a code breaker for a near fall. Danielson backflipped out of the corner, and somewhere in here, referee Paul Turner got bumped. So he got bumped, he hit the ropes hard, he went down, right? So the referee's been taken out. Jericho and Danielson collided, they did a double down. Matt Menard was outside. He threw the ROH belt into the ring to Jericho. There was a timing snafu, because the spot was Jericho was going to pick up the Ring of Honor world title. And Bryan Danielson is in the corner. He's going to bring himself to his feet. Daniel Garcia is going to come out, and he's going to pull the title away from Jericho. Jericho's standing there, and he's kind of not so subtly looking behind him like, where's he at? There was no Garcia. So he had to stall until they finally sent this kid to the ring. I don't blame Garcia for that. I blame whoever was supposed to tell him to get out there. Finally, he comes running out, and he gets into the ring, and he rips the title out of Jericho's hands. Danielson took Jericho down off that distraction. He took Jericho down with a running knee strike, but then Daniel Garcia clobbers Bryan Danielson with the Ring of Honor World Championship and knocks him out. Angelo Parker puts Paul Turner back in the ring. Jericho makes the cover, and he steals the win to retain the Ring of Honor World title. After the match, Garcia handed the belt to Jericho. William Regal, Claudio Castagnoli, Wheeler Yuta, they head down to the ring, and that was the cue for the JAS to take their exit. This was the usual really good match that you would expect from these two. I like their last match better, but again, another really good match between Chris Jericho and Bryan Danielson. I mean, not really a surprise. I don't think they would go out. I don't think they could go out there and have a bad match. This is not Jericho in his prime. But Jericho's been going out there. He's been having some really great matches with Danielson, Bandito. So you got to give Jericho his due. Even if you don't like him, even if you're bored of him or whatever, you can't deny the fact that he goes out there and he can still work. And maybe he needs the right opponent for it. But look, it takes two to tango. He's been going out there in recent weeks. This is the third time he's been in the ring with Bryan Danielson in the last several weeks. And all three matches have been good to great. The match with Bandito was excellent a few weeks ago. That's the match that earned Bandito a contract with AEW, which I believe he signed. I don't know, actually. Come to think of it, did we ever get the All Elite graphic for him? I don't think we did. So maybe Bandito has yet to put pen to paper. But he has had offers from AEW and WWE. WWE was already looking to get in contact with him before the match with Jericho was even over. So this entire time he's been contract free, he's been available, he's on Dynamite, and before the show is even over, WWE's already making an offer. So I don't know where things stand with Bandito, but the point is Jericho has been having some kick-ass matches, and this one was no exception. Now, as far as the finish was what the finish was. This wasn't even really about the match. This was all about the finish. This was all about Daniel Garcia in the end. My initial reaction when I saw this was, probably like many of you, my reaction was, ugh. That was my reaction. Yeah. Right? This is exactly what I was hoping we wouldn't see. The big swerve, Garcia with a big smile on his face, laying out Danielson, it was all one big ruse. And there are some people who are going to watch that and think that that's exactly what this was. I don't think that's what this was. And Garcia was not smiling. He did not have a smile. He was not laughing. I don't think that's what this was. My take on this is that we are going to find out that Garcia did this because he wants to be the one to restore honor to the Ring of Honor World Championship. He wants to be the one to take that title from Chris Jericho. He doesn't want it to be Bryan Danielson or anybody else. He wants it to be him. And they're going to take a little bit longer to get there. They're going to stretch things out for a while because there's still plenty of other Ring of Honor World Champions for Jericho to wrestle. Right? He said he's going to go through all the champions. He's going to desecrate the title. They just started this angle. We're only in the beginning stages of this angle. Plenty of other people for him to get in the ring with on TV. Jay Lethal, Dalton Castle. I mean, you can go down the list, the former ROH champion. There's a whole bunch of guys who they could bring in, or who they already have under contract, who I think would have a really fun match with Chris Jericho. And Jericho can beat them one by one. But the story is going to end up exactly where the story was always intended to end up. Nothing has changed. It's just going to prolong things a little bit more. But nothing has changed. The end result of this story is Daniel Garcia being the one to defeat Chris Jericho and restore honor to the Ring of Honor world title. Now, he may have to lose the Pure title before then, because he has that Ring of Honor Pure title. So maybe it's a situation where Jericho cost him the title, even if it's an accident. You know, that'll just hasten the split between them. But the end result will be no different. So that I think is what's going on here. I don't think he's really fully all in as far as the Jericho group goes, even though you watch this and you would think it's Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker all over again. But I think we're going to come to find out in the next couple of weeks that's not what this was. Speaking of which, Jamie Hayter was out next for a tag team match. Big pop. Everywhere this woman goes, they chant her name. She gets a big reaction. Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker taking on the interim AEW Women's World Champion Toni Storm and Hikaru Shida, the former AEW Women's Champion. I think she was Women's Champion for a year, if I'm not mistaken. So the champion was being isolated the entire commercial break until Shida made the hot tag. Shida ran wild. She took down Britt Baker with a jumping knee. Hayter tried to break things up. She got suplexed from the apron into the ring. Britt Baker got suplexed onto Hayter. Shida hit a meteora, there you go, off the ropes for two. And Toni Storm countered a backbreaker into a bulldog. Shida got back into things, ate a double super kick, though, and a curb stomp from Britt Baker for two. Baker briefly had lockjaw on Shida, who got a roll up for a near fall. Shida hit a spinning falcon arrow on Britt. Both women traded pin attempts until Shida got a flash pin with a high stack for the win out of nowhere. This was a very good match, and it was a huge win for Shida, who now challenges Toni Storm for the interim women's championship on Dynamite in Cincinnati next week. That's why they put her over in this match. They needed a reason to put Shida in the ring with Toni Storm to challenge for the title. That's why she got the win here, and it was Britt Baker, not Jamie Hayter. Jamie Hayter is the one who's super over right now. They did not beat Jamie Hayter. They beat Britt Baker, and that's good. And so now Shida is going to get a championship match on TV next week. But I thought this was a very strong showing from these four women. And Jamie Hayter continues to be over everywhere. Every city they go to, every arena they go to. Really, even before All Out, she is just over. And I would imagine that there's so many Tonys. Tony Khan is not deaf, and he can hear the reactions, and hopefully he will do right by Jamie Hayter, because the people, yet another example of the people dictating who and what they want to see. Jamie Hayter is the one who is over in the eyes of the fans. And with Chris Statlander being out for so long, I still maintain she would have been my number one, and then she got hurt. She's going to be out for a while, right? ACL surgery, it's not a quick fix. Jade Cargill, she's not going to be undefeated for another 6 months or 8 months. Who is going to beat Jade Cargill for the TBS championship? The answer is right in front of your face. Her name is Jamie Hayter. It's got to be. The main event was Pac defending his AEW All-Atlantic Championship against Orange Cassidy. Pac went into Rampage and Battle of the Belts last week. He wrestled in the main event of Rampage, and then at 11 o'clock when Battle of the Belts started, he was in the opener. So he wrestled over 35 minutes in back-to-back matches on Friday. And I didn't really do much of a review. I gave a very quick overview of things as far as those two shows went. But he and Trent Barretta had a damn good match on that Battle of the Belt show. Trent had 0% chance of winning the match. But he went out there with Pac. They had a great match. Pac has had some very good defenses of that title, including against Orange Cassidy. This was their latest meeting, and they got the main event spot on this show tonight. And you had to know that them putting this on in the main event, and this being the rematch, and this being their first big show in Canada, you had to think a title change was coming. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Cassidy went for a suicide dive early on. Pac caught him, though, and slammed him on the floor hard with a Falcon Arrow, heading into the final picture-in-picture. During the break, Pac gave Cassidy a leaping tombstone on the ramp. Then he grabbed the referee and took him back down to the ring and was waiting for the countout. Cassidy began to roll himself down the ramp, but of course he still had to get up and physically get into the ring. He got up, he fell down a couple of times. If this was the NFL, if this was the Miami Dolphins, they would have looked at him and put him right back in the ring. So he gets into the ring, he beats the count. Pac grabs the referee, Cassidy was back in the ring, the referee was checking on him in the brutalizer because Pac put him in the brutalizer submission, trying to get him to tap out. Cassidy got his foot on the bottom rope. Pac went outside. He tried to go for the ring bell hammer. We've seen him do this. He did this with Trent on Friday. He's done this in many of his recent matches. He tried to use the hammer as a weapon, but he got stopped. And after he got stopped, a diving DDT by Cassidy connects through the ropes. Pac, I don't know that in my entire life of watching wrestling, I have seen anybody sell a DDT as good as Pac. His DDT sells look fucking great. And this is not anything new. This goes back to the matches he was having in NXT. I vividly remember a match that he had. I want to say it was with Tyler Breeze. It could have been Tyson Kidd, but I'm almost positive it was Tyler Breeze on an episode of NXT. That was the first time I think I ever saw him take a DDT, and I went, holy shit, just on a regular DDT. So he took this DDT, and he sold it fucking great. There is nobody in wrestling who can sell a DDT, sell the shit out of it the way that Pac can. It looked great. So back in the ring, Cassidy hits the orange punch. Pac, though, kicks out at two. They ended up on the apron. Pac was about to try for something. Cassidy, though, countered into a beach break on the apron. Inside the ring, Pac avoided another orange punch, locked on the brutalizer again. Pac's ear was leaking blood all over his shoulder. And then they got a close-up shot of the ear, and it looked like somebody or something had taken a chunk out of it. I didn't see how the injury happened, but his whole ear was bloody. Pac went for the hammer again. Went for the hammer, but this time the timekeeper stopped. But the timekeeper had makeup. You can see, even though he was wearing a face mask, he had makeup under the mask. He pulls off the face mask, and sure enough, it's Danhausen. And Danhausen went to go put a Danhausen curse on Pac, and Pac just slapped the shit out of him and knocked him down. Just decked him. So Bryce Remsburg comes over, and he spots Pac with the hammer. And he's asking him, what are you doing? You can't do that. You can't use that. Took it away from him. Pac says, okay. He goes under the ring. When the referee isn't looking, he pulls out a second hammer. And he brings it into the ring with him, and he's going to use the hammer as a weapon. But Orange Cassidy catches him with a punch. Cassidy then reaches down. He picks up the hammer. He's going to use the hammer as a weapon. Bryce Remsburg gets in and sees this and says, no, no. And he warns him, if you use this as a weapon, you will be disqualified. You will not win the championship. So Cassidy is, you know, he's having this crisis of conscience here, and he's getting all angry. There's more emotion than we usually see from him. While he's trying to, you know, control his rage, Pac sneaks up from behind, rolls him up for a near fall. Cassidy comes back with an orange punch, and then another one. And he gets the 1-2-3 to win the match. And for the first time in his AEW career, Orange Cassidy is a champion. He has a title. He is the All-Atlantic champion. Sometimes you just need to give the people what they want. That is what Tony Khan did here in Toronto. They gave the people what they wanted to see. It got a big reaction at the end of the show. What they wanted was an Orange Cassidy title win. And again, you don't have to like it. You don't have to like him. You can think he's a joke. You're not into the pocket stuff or the light kicks. You don't get it or out of the thumbs up. You hate the gimmick. You think it's everything that's wrong with wrestling. I can't stand it. I don't like the guy. The guy is over. The guy's over. I can't explain it. I'm not even sure exactly why he's as over as he is. But he is. Has been for a very long time. And there are times where, and Tony Khan has said this, where they'll check the quarter hour ratings for some of his matches on TV. I know this was true, you know, probably last year, which is why I thought we saw him with a bunch of main event segments on the show. Because they did well, numbers-wise. His segments would do better than most other segments on the show. So with their audience, with the AEW audience, they love this guy. That's why he's been around. That's why he's featured as prominently as he is. But he's never won a championship up to this point. You know, he's never held a title, tag team title, trios title, singles title, anything like that. But it was the right time. You know, he had already lost to Pac more than once. And this was the right outcome. This is what this entire thing was building to, was this big moment in the main event of their first Canadian show, and you do a big title change for a title that really doesn't mean anything, but you put the title on him, he got the big reaction, they gave him a little confetti celebration, the best friends came out in the ring to celebrate with him. But on top of all that, they had a hell of a match. So again, mock the man all you want to. If you don't want to be a fan of his, that's perfectly fine. Orange Cassidy has had some fucking bangers this year. None better than the match he had with Will Ospreay at the Forbidden Door pay-per-view. Those two guys went out there and had a match that when this year is over and people are talking about what was the match of the year, maybe it's not the match of the year, but it's in the conversation. When I think back on the best matches that I enjoyed from the year 2022, and the year's not over yet, we got a couple of War Games matches coming up next month. When I think about the great matches I've seen this year, this will be one of the, not tonight, but I'm talking about the match at Forbidden Door, will be one of those matches that I'm going to remember most. And you can say Will Ospreay is great. He is. Will Ospreay may be the best in the world in the ring, bell to bell. But he's not in there with a fucking stick figure. He's in there with somebody who can work his ass off. And I think he needs to be given credit for that. I think the guy needs to be given his flowers for what he can do in the ring. When you strip out all the comedy and all the silliness, the guy has his working boots on. He can fucking work. He can go in there and wrestle and have as good of a match as anybody else on the roster. And tonight was the big payoff for Orange Cassidy. I thought it was a great way to close out the show. Close out what was one of the strongest episodes of Dynamite of this entire year. Now, Rampage on Friday night has Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli taking on The Butcher and The Blade. Ethan Page goes one-on-one with Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party. We talked about the stipulation already, where if Cassidy wins, he's gone from the firm. Private Party can leave the firm. If he loses, the firm is going to have three new members. They're going to have Private Party, and they're going to have Matt Hardy. Nyla Rose takes on Anna Jay. FTR and Sean Spears take on Brian Cage in the Gates of Agony. Dynamite next Tuesday, not Wednesday, Tuesday, as Jon Moxley and Hangman Page for the AEW World title, Tony Storm and Hikaru Shida for the Interim Women's title. Renee will sit down with Yuta and Danielson of the Blackpool Combat Club for a special interview, and MJF will speak. On what, we don't know, but we were told that MJF will speak. This is the Twitter poll for your feedback on tonight's show. 68.4% thumbs up, 18% thumbs in the middle, and 13% of you gave this show a thumbs down. So if you would like to vote in the poll, the place to go, as it is every week, is at Solomonster. I want to hear from you. What did you think of this Dynamite show tonight? Let me know. Let me know what you thought about that show tonight. I enjoyed it. As far as Rampage on Friday, we'll be doing another SmackDown review this week. It will likely be SmackDown only. It's going to take more than this lineup I'm looking at. I know they're throwing Jon Moxley on there thinking, oh, okay, we're going to put the champion on the show, right? So it's going to be a big show. You know, give me a break. These Rampage lineups are a joke. So I will very likely be skipping out on Rampage again this week. Let's take a look at your Super Chats. If you want to send them on in, I appreciate the support. I will do my best to answer your questions and read them, like this one here from Fire Panda. On Instagram, somebody said that Zelina Vega's return had a bigger impact than Bray Wyatt's return. Can you explain to the chat why this is wrong? I mean, there's no need for me to explain anything. You obviously talked to somebody who has some kind of defect in their brain. It's not fun to make fun. It's not right to make fun of people like that. The best thing to do is just kind of shake your head and move on. I don't know of anybody who has said anything as stupid as that. So I have no idea what Instagram you're looking at. My suggestion to you is to just block those accounts. Those are not accounts that you should be following. I don't know why you would even follow someone who says that. Shinakuma. Finished all of the This Week in Wrestling History segments. Finished while I was at work and driving. I'm glad you enjoyed them. That's why I have them all organized in a neat playlist for all of you here on the channel. Fire Panda says, I stan Shin Akuma. So Shin has a fan in Fire Panda. Joseph Brooks, thank you for the $9.99, brother. I appreciate that. With LA Knight finally and knowing that he can bring so much to the current WWE... Do you think once he wins his debut match that he should start going for a title or not right now? Dude, he hasn't even wrestled on the main roster yet as LA Knight. Like, let him have his first match. We don't need to be talking about championship. He's going to be on SmackDown. And he's not wrestling Roman Reigns. That leaves Walter. Why do you want to kill this man before he even makes his debut as LA Knight? So... let's back away from the title talk. Let him have his debut match against Mansoir. And then we'll see where he goes from there. We do not need to be talking about titles yet. Lakers Pats, have my first audition tomorrow and Tony equals Russo, bro. Well, I don't know what it's an audition for, but I hope that everything goes well. Bing user 2022 with the $5 super chat. Our pal, he's on the Bing browser. Adrenaline in my soul. Cody is back. I'm interested in seeing what he does at SummerSlam. I hope we're finally done with Brock and Roman. He's catching up. He's almost in real time. I'm very impressed. I just hope his system doesn't, his motherboard doesn't bug out on him or something, but Bing user, you're catching up to us. Off Leather Wings, Bobby Cruz is better than Justin Roberts, is what Off Leather Wings has to say. Joseph Brooks, sorry to ask you this. I really didn't want to, but my friend told me to. He told me to ask which of these horrible matches sound the most awful. Giant Gonzalez against Kali or Abdullah the Butcher against New Jack? Abdullah the Butcher and New Jack, I think there are people who would love that match. People who love blood and guts would love that match. Yeah, tell your friend that's a very stupid question. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, did not watch AEW tonight. Just watch one hockey game tonight, about to watch another one, and watch AEW at the same time. God, I hate Wednesdays again. Define Real, congrats on your win tonight against PAC. Well, thank you very much. Mac 2 was in the crowd tonight, saw a sign for your podcast in the front row. Really, I did not see that. I must have missed that. If anybody got a shot of that, send me the screenshot. I totally did not see that. Crowd was hot all night. Glad AEW could come north of the border. Cheers. Derek J. Speaks. Would love Wardlow and Joe at Full Gear for the TNT title. That would be great. Wardlow needs to have a feature match at that pay-per-view. Wardlow should be doing more than what he's doing right now. It's almost as if they had these people in Wardlow and FTR. They were so over, and they just didn't know what to do with them. And now they're just kind of doing, they just kind of put them in the same angle, and they're working with the ROH crew, but nobody really cares about the ROH crew. They got to get this guy going. They got to get this guy going in something legit. Wardlow and Joe would be legit. Uffman Entertainment with the $2. Can someone check in on Jim Cornette? David Hart. I think Garcia is going lone wolf and will try to take the JAS out from the inside. I'm really interested to see where this will go. I think you're right. Again, I don't think this was just him reuniting with his old buddies and it was all just part of the master plan. I don't think that's exactly what happened tonight at all. Boots, in recognition of AEW making it to Bizarro World, here's some loonies and toonies for the liquor and maple syrup fun. Thank you, Boots. Pillow v. Pillow, I cannot wait to see Chris Jericho against Takeshi Morishima. Hey, that would have been a great match at one time. I think Morishima is retired, is he not? I think he retired a long time ago. I saw a couple of Morishima matches live when I used to go to the ROH shows at the Manhattan Center. That's a great feud. Him and Danielson had a great feud back in the mid-2000s. Well, mid to late 2000s. Rizzo with the $10 super chat. Ariel sounds like he wanted a real interview, whereas Tony Khan thought he was going on Wrestling with Brandon Walker. I don't know if you've listened to that podcast, but Wrestling does fluff and in-character interviews. Yeah, Tony Khan just, if you are interviewing him, you're not going to get much. He doesn't give you anything. He doesn't give you anything interesting. You know, everything with him is very close to the vet. And it's not even just the punk stuff. I can understand, okay, there could be legal ramifications. That thing is not over yet. But he doesn't offer much of anything. You're going to do a long interview with him. It's going to be pretty dull. I can understand why he would be frustrated. But I'll have more to say about that on the podcast. Liquid Sharingan. Thank you for the what, Shane. Rizzo, Matthews isn't as good as Connor. Connor McJesus. Rizzo, damn it, I wish I knew about this trademark a month ago. I would have trademarked. You probably would have been rejected. Fire Panda, feeling down tonight, so I'm going to ask a question to make myself laugh. Can you scream into the mic and turn it into a super chat, please and thank you? I cannot scream. I cannot scream into the mic. But I can tell you that I hope that you will have a better day tomorrow than the one you had today. I want Fire Panda, I want every day for Fire Panda to be a good day. I don't like hearing that you're feeling down. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear good things. I want to hear positive things from you. Dick the Cog Johnson, if Rose is not back for Full Gear, then the women's title match should be Hayter and Storm, in my opinion. And even if she is back, to be honest, Hayter and Storm is more interesting as a match. Dylan Hensley with the $10 super chat. Is it hypocritical for fans to criticize AEW for debuting guys or making references that people need to look up online to understand while WWE is doing the same thing with the White Rabbit stuff? I mean, those are not the same things at all. The White Rabbit stuff is in no way similar to... I mean, I assume what you're referring to is when AEW will mention kind of insider lingo stuff in a promo. I mean, that is not at all the same thing as the White Rabbit stuff. The White Rabbit stuff was... It was actually very smart. It was a form of viral marketing to build to a Bray Wyatt return. And people were into it. They had fun with it. They did searches online and people were engaged. You know, it was a unique approach. I'm sure they're going to do more of it now that they've seen how successful it was. Knowing WWE, they'll beat it into the ground. We'll start getting QR codes every fucking week on TV. But no, those are not the same. Crazy, congrats on winning the title from Pac. Well, you know, it was a hard-fought battle. But I am bigger than that. So. Liquid Shuring, and by the way, congrats on your first title win in pro wrestling. Hey, I got my Solomonster title in the other room, so I already have a championship. That's the more important championship. And Liquid Shuring, and I'm not going to read that second super chat, but I will thank you. I will thank you nonetheless for the $2. Rizzo, Velvet Sky just destroyed Dixie on Twitter when asked about the downfall of Impact, and it got me thinking, what if they stayed on Spike? How much different would things have been? Probably not very different at all. Because at the end of the day, it all comes down to the booking. And TNA was already headed down the fucking toilet in a lot of respects. And you could say, you know, the Hogan and the Bischoff stuff had a lot to do with that also. And there was a lot to like about Impact during that period in the mid-2010s when I got back into it after being out of it for a while. And I went to a lot of the live shows. When they came to New York, they would do these tapings every few months at the Manhattan Center, and I was there in the front row. I have a lot of positive memories from that period, but whether or not they stayed on Spike, it would have been better for the health of the company had they stayed on Spike, but I think the end result would have been the same. And all the people who were no longer there and Dixie, you know, leaving, all that would have happened. It might have taken a little bit longer, but all that same stuff would have happened. Bob the Builder, the only Tony Khan interviews that I consider interesting are the ones that he does with Meltzer. He is way more open with Meltzer than anybody else. Even Meltzer went on Twitter today and said the same thing. He said that he also has been very, you know, frustrated trying to get answers out of AEW and trying to get answers out of Tony Khan on certain subjects. They're very secretive about a lot of stuff, even when it comes to injuries. They're very, just very closed off in ways where they don't always need to be so closed off, but they are. So I know that's very frustrating to a lot of people. And yeah, Meltzer said the same thing actually on social media today. That's right. BlissFan says Impact will not die. You know, once on the podcast many, 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 many years ago, I made the comment that they're like a cockroach, you know, and if there was a nuclear holocaust in this world, you know, the only things that'll be left are the Twinkies and Impact Wrestling. They truly are like the cockroach of the wrestling business. And I don't mean that as a derogatory thing. I just mean they're going to always be here no matter what. They're going to end up outliving all these other companies at the moment that are even bigger than them. They'll outlive AEW. They'll outlive MLW. They'll outlive, you know, fucking PWG and all these companies that have been around for so long. They won't outlive WWE, but Impact is, it's like the cat with nine lives. They're not going to go anywhere. Von Tell, thank you for the $2, says, watch only GC, so WYR. I don't know what WYR stands for. Watch only GCW for 3 months or every OMOS match. I would not do either of those things. That sounds terrible. I don't care about GCW, and I have no interest in watching any OMOS match. I would just stop watching wrestling. So that's my answer. I would quit watching wrestling. If those were the only options that you have given me, I would no longer be watching wrestling. Food Hive, late to the party, but hello all. I've missed the chat. Has everybody followed and subscribed to Food Hive on all platforms yet? Asking for a friend. So there you go. Always got to get that cheap plug in. Always got to get that cheap plug in. Would you rather? Okay. So yeah, I learned something new tonight. Would you rather? You got to spell this shit out for me. Help me out here. All these acronyms. I'm supposed to remember all this stuff? I only first realized what TFW means 6 months ago. 5 years. I'm like, I would see this in all these tweets. TFW, TFW. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? But I never bothered to look it up because I just couldn't be bothered. 6 months ago, I finally realized what it meant. You think I'm going to know what WYR stands for? Anyway, I enjoyed the show tonight. Likely going to do just SmackDown, though, on Friday night. I don't think anybody's going to mind if we focus on SmackDown, which is going to be a big show on Friday because apparently Bray Wyatt will be on the show, or at least, well, that hasn't been said specifically, but it looks like Bray is going to be SmackDown exclusive going forward. So they're teasing something with him on Friday. I think they're actually in New Orleans. And so, yeah, the Bray Wyatt character, right, has links to Louisiana. It's kind of his stomping grounds. So we'll see him on the show on Friday. Now, Tamara, I did not mean WTF. I meant TFW. TFW, so you don't know what TFW means. See, haha, so I'm not the only one. I did not make a mistake. TFW means that feeling when. I did not know that until about 6 months ago. So now I don't feel so bad. See, Tamara didn't know either. The Coug is headed down to Mexico City for Triple Mania tomorrow. I could use you for a cantina bar fight after the show. Tequila shot. Oh, I miss those days of having the tequila shots. Oh, actually, not really. I can't say I miss those days very much. they usually did a number on me. But have a tequila shot for me. Have a tequila shot for me and enjoy Triple Mania. You very likely would have had Kenny Omega against Vikingo, but obviously Kenny is not going to be on that show. Rizzo with the $5 super chat. Poor USA, SmackDown and Fox get Bray and Braun and Raw gets the Good Brothers. Not a fair trade. I agree. Bob the Builder. To Tony's credit, Ariel did keep constantly pressuring him about his relationship with Nick Khan. If I'm Tony, I'm not giving in to what he is trying to do. Yeah, I mean, it cuts both ways. I've watched most of it. I have not finished the interview, but I've watched, it's over an hour. I've watched most of it. Ariel's a Nick Khan guy. I think Nick Khan might have been his agent. I think that's the relationship between them. Ariel just did a voiceover for the video package for Extreme Rules for Seth Rollins against Matt Riddle in the Fight Pit. So that's, you know, you got to keep that in mind too. He's been doing a lot of WWE stuff recently. But I'm just saying, in a lot of these interviews that Tony Khan does, you don't really get much out of it. I can understand why somebody would do something, with him like that and would be frustrated to not, it's like pulling teeth. You know, you want to get something out of it. And I can totally understand why he would feel that way. But it was very weird that he would publicly go out the way that he did, though, on his show and kind of call him out like that, which I thought that was a little bizarre. Annan New York with the $10 super chat. Shout out to my buddy Jonathan, Chief Running Wolf, who got me hooked on your content. Happy birthday, brother. Solo, can we get a birthday shout out from one Johnny Ace to another? Well, happy birthday. Happy birthday, brother. Is that Chief Running Wolf? Is that his name? Well, happy birthday to Jonathan. I don't know how old you are, but I wish you a very happy birthday from the Solo Monster. As only we can around here, we wish you a very happy birthday. You could thank your friend for that shout out. Hulkling 93, since 2020, I have enjoyed OC against PAC. Great character dynamics and story. PAC returning, or refusing, rather. Punk, pop, pop. These things are coming in hot and heavy now. It keeps knocking them down. PAC refusing to give Orange Cassidy respect, but always taken to the limit and having to cheat to win. Great cap off to their rivalry. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, right? He never took him seriously. Even at the very beginning when they first had a match a couple of years ago, I think it was, PAC looked at this guy as a fucking joke. He never took him seriously. They have these matches that are very competitive. And like you said, I mean, he's been acting very heelish recently, but he's got to try to cheat to win. He can't even beat the guy straight up. He's got to try to use a hammer. He's got to try to cheat and take a shortcut. So there's a story there that they've been telling. It's been building and building and building. And tonight was just the right moment to pull the trigger and do the title change. It's just, it worked out perfectly that it was in the main event of their first big Canadian show. I only wish they would have run a bigger building. I really think they could have put 15,000 people in a building if they wanted to. For their first Canadian show, I think they could have put at least 15,000 in a bigger building. But I guess logistically, I guess the other arena just wasn't available, but they could have done it on a different day. Right? There was no law saying they had to do their Canadian debut on October 12th, I'm just saying. Fallout X1, can Warner Brothers Discovery have The Rock promote Black Adam on AEW? They can have The Rock promote Black Adam wherever and whenever they want. Rock is not under contract to WWE. He can do anything he wants. If The Rock wants to walk out on Dynamite next week and say, if you smell what The Rock is cooking, he can do that. There's nothing stopping him other than his loyalty to WWE. Yeah, no, there's nothing stopping him from doing it. Other than I can see Rock being like, I've got the relationship with WWE, I would rather not. So Rock would be able to pick and choose probably whether he wants to do that or not. But yeah, no, there's nothing stopping him from doing it. Abhinav, did you see Ace Steel's tweet on Wrestle Purist's account? No, I did not. HBKC83, is Cody the greatest TNT champion in the short history of AEW? Was debating this with friends at work. Yes, he is. He is the one that made that title feel special. Duffs, it was either a sellout or a near sellout tonight, and I think the number was between 6,000 and 7,000. I think that's what the Coca-Cola Coliseum fits in Toronto. Rizzo, if I remember correctly, I believe Ariel spoiled a big UFC fight announcement. I forget if it was Brock's return or another fight. Michael says Tony Khan be driving south of the border. Is that for his hookup? Is that for his stash? Is that where the good stuff comes from? Dr. Dakota Scorpio, Mets and Blue Jays need better help to cope with their mental breakdown in the playoffs. Hate to see it. Shaking my head. Yeah, well, I have a code that all of the Mets players can use for better help if they want to take advantage of that. Miguel says that Ace Steel posted that he is free from AEW. Well, he should be. If the reports about what he did in that brawl are accurate, he should have been the first one out the door. So if that's true, if that's the case, I'm not surprised by that at all. And Maze says it was Brock's return that soured Dana on Ariel. I'm surprised he didn't have him taken out. You know Dana knows some people. If Dana wanted somebody rubbed out, I'm thinking it probably wouldn't be all that difficult. Tamara says AEW is free from a steal, not a steal being free from AEW. Well, we'll see what happens with that whole thing. You know, you can't stay quiet on that for forever. And Ace Steel was best friends with CM Punk. I have said that I think Punk should be gone. I think we've seen him wrestle his last match in an AEW ring. I could be wrong about that. I'm sure Tony Khan doesn't want to get rid of him, but some things just have to be done. And you have to look at the bigger picture here and say, is this going to be good long-term for my company keeping this person around after what happened? And I don't think it's worth it, but if Ace Steel is gone, that could be perhaps a sign of Punk's future. We don't know. It could be a tip-off to what's to come, but until they make some kind of official announcement, we just don't know. But again, I'm just seeing what Miguel mentioned in the chat. I'll have to wait and see if there is such a tweet. To be honest with you, I'd be surprised if it was some random tweet, given that everybody has been sworn to secrecy. Even Tony Khan is not saying a word. Punk hasn't said a word. Omega hasn't said a word. The Bucks haven't said a word. I mean, it would be a little strange, I would think, if all of a sudden Ace Steel is out there tweeting about this. So I will have to, when we're done here, I'll go see if this is legit or not. It may or may not be legit. We'll see. All right, one last look at the poll here before we get out of here. Again, you can always vote at Solomonster is the place to follow me on Twitter, so please go on there and do vote if you have not already done so. I am going to be back with you live on Friday night. We're going to do the Friday night stream, talking what should be a big episode of SmackDown. That will be the lead-in to episode 778 of the Sound Off coming up this Sunday. If you missed it, episode 777, over 2 hours long, covered a lot of really good shit. Tales from the Territories, I'll be reviewing episode 2 this week as well. So please go ahead and check that out. Hit that like button. I know we didn't hit the goal, we fell just short, but we'll shoot for Be the Booker on Friday night. Hit the like button anyway on your way out. And also consider becoming a channel member, subscribe, all that good stuff. Keep supporting the channel. This doesn't happen without all of you. One last super chat here, actually two. Bob the Builder says, do you see CM Punk coming back? I just answered that. No, I don't. And Thunder Knight, if Punk is done with AEW, do you think he is done with wrestling, period? If CM Punk is done with AEW, then yes, I believe he is done with wrestling. Because I do not see him going back to WWE. I don't see that happening. All right. I'm out of here, guys. Have yourselves a good night. Be well. Stay safe. Keep supporting. And I will see you back here on Friday night. Oh, look at this. Milton! Where do I know that name from? Oh, The Walking Dead. That's right. The new season of The Walking Dead. Milton with a $3 super chat just got back from the show. Look at this. Milton was at the show tonight. He was at the Coca-Cola Coliseum. Hope you caught my sign for the podcast. Oh, Milton, it was Milton's sign. I did not see it. I had one person say that they were in the building and they saw the sign. I did not see it, though. So, again, if anybody has a screenshot of this, send it to me. Tweet it to me. I will share it out with everybody, but I did not see the sign, but thank you for representing the podcast. That was very cool. He says, been watching for a while now, wanted to show some love. Milton, that is very awesome. I appreciate you doing that. Obviously, there were people in the building who did see it. Hopefully, somebody can get a shot of it, and I will be able to share that with the world. Rizzo, I just tagged you in the Wrestle Purist tweet. Ace's account is private, so someone captured said tweet. All right, well, I'll have to check that out. I always take some stuff I see on social media when it comes to tweets with a grain of salt, unless I see it myself, so I will check that out. Turtlehead, thank you for the $1.99, and Fire Panda says, not to stall, but I love you. What is this? Everyone is saying, did we actually hit 500? I was literally about to get out of here. And Then I saw Milton's super chat, and would you look at this? We have 501 likes on this stream. You know, you guys have a knack for last-minute theatrics here on these streams. It is uncanny. Now, if only the Mets had that same knack for late-inning theatrics, perhaps they would still be playing right now. Dakota says, again, I'm sorry for what I started. We got 500. And Tripod officially reached 500 likes. Let's go! Del Fuego says, hero of the night is Milton. So Milton gave us a sound-off sign on the show, and Milton also gives us Be the Booker. How about that? And how about Tamara, who just gifted 5 Solomonster Sounds-Off memberships? Holy shit, Tamara, you are awesome. You can do that, by the way. You can gift memberships to people. I know I haven't mentioned that. I probably should. You can gift memberships to people. And Tamara just gifted a whole bunch of memberships here. Mordecai, Juan. Look at this. Look at all these people who just got gifted memberships. MH Nova. Michael. Amazing. Rocky Road. Hey, Tamara, you forgot Rocky Road. Rocky Road says, I need a membership. You can hit that join button, you cheapskate. Come on. All right, let's go. Let's thank Milton, everybody. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to all of our new channel members. Who I see they've discovered the they have discovered the emotes. And they are going crazy in the chat. Let's be the booker. You guys got it in right at the buzzer. So we are going to begin with the men's Be the Booker. Now, I have added a few faces to this, so we'll see if any of them pop up. Drew McInluger just popped up on my screen. All right, let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. We begin with the Macho Man. Ooh, yeah. Oh, can't think of a better way to start Be the Booker. One of the greatest of all time right here. The Macho Man, Randy Savage. You can't go wrong with the Macho Man. Look at all of these new MVPs that we have. MVPs, VIPs. All these new members in the chat. I love it. All right, let's see. The Macho Man is going to go one-on-one with the Macho Man. You know, I gotta say, we've had this happen a couple of times before. We had it happen once with Andrade, and we had it happen once with Kurt Angle. And I will say that Kurt Angle against Kurt Angle is a great fucking match, but there is no better match than the Macho Man against the Macho Man. And not only is it the Macho Man against the Macho Man, it's two different Macho Man images that it just so happened to land on. What a great fucking match. The Macho Man Randy Savage is going to take on the Macho Man Randy Savage. Maybe it'll be the Macho Man against the Macho King. Babyface Randy against heel Randy. I love it. Oh, I love it. I'm so glad we did be the booker tonight. That made it worth it just right there. That made the whole thing worth it. All right, let's pick the women's match. We begin with Becky Lynch, the former Raw and SmackDown Women's Champion, who is probably going to be back on TV any week now. Definitely, I expect her to be back in time for War Games. It's going to be Becky Lynch. Who's it going to be? Becky Lynch is going to be taking on Sasha Banks. Yes! We have a winner! You want to see a great fucking match, you go watch their Hell in a Cell match from Hell in a Cell 2019. The only thing on that show worth a damn. We're not even going to talk about the main event that night. But the opening match on that card was Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch, and they had an excellent Hell in a Cell match. They had a great match back in NXT. We are 2 for 2. Macho Man and Macho Man, Becky and Sasha. Now we have to end this on a high note here. This is what I'm worried about. This is where I hope things don't fall apart. We begin with, men on a mission. We have Mabel. We have Mo. We have Larry. We have Curly. Now we have Oscar. Mabel and Mo. Let's see. Who knows, right? Maybe they'll end up in the ring with a team that can carry them to at least a 3-star match. Men on a mission against Bayley and Sasha Banks. Not even Bayley and Sasha could save that. Second time we've had Sasha Banks pop up and be the booker tonight. We had two Macho Mans, we had two Sashas. At least Sasha is not wrestling herself. Do you know what they say? Two out of three ain't bad. So there you go. I would call that a successful edition of Be the Book. Let's see. What messages here have I missed? Thomas with the $5 super chat. It's the power of the prayer. I gotta have Be the Booker. Well, you got it. Your prayers have been answered. Drew McIncock, who pied Kevin Owens? We still don't know. We never did find out who pied him on that one episode of Raw. Rocky Road just became a sound-off superstar. And, you know, usually I reserve this for the really big Super Chat bombs, but I'm so excited by all the memberships that Tamara gifted, and now I see Rocky Road is a channel member. We got to drop some bombs! There you go. Hey, it didn't work out the way I wanted to. It didn't work out the way that I had intended, but there you go. That went about as well as the finish to that Revolution barbed wire match. The barbed wire exploding death match. I don't know what happened there. There we go. Fuck. Had a fucking thing to work. There we go. Terrible. Food Hive says, Booker of the Year. That's right. Take that, Tony Khan. You ain't getting shit from Meltzer this year. I'm getting the award for Booker of the Year, not Tony Khan. Botchamania. No, that's our new thing for when we get a big super, like a $50 or $100 super chat. You go bombs away and you go boom. It's like that. You know, we're all about the special effects here on these streams. Well, again, I want everybody... give a hearty thank you to Tamara. That was very nice of her to gift those memberships to people. And again, they are open to everybody if you want to check it out. If you want to join and become a member, it's just another way to support the channel, and you get a few perks in return. You get my appreciation as well. Hulkling, thank you for the $5 super chat. Don't forget Roman Bryan against Rowan and Harper. That was the only other match that you gave high praise to from Hell in a Cell 2019. Yeah, I have no memory of that match. But I will take your word for it. That was also a good match. But I don't remember that at all, actually. I'm going to get on out of here. I will see you on Friday night. And until then, guys, have yourselves a good night. Thank you for all the support. And we'll do it all over again in 48 hours. I'll see you guys then.